Hi, and welcome to Prosody, 90.5 FM's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Jenny Johnson. Jenny Johnson's poems have appeared in The Best American Poetry 2012, The Collagist, Blackbird, Troubling the Line, Trans and Genderqueer Poetry and Poetics, and elsewhere. She's been the recipient of the 2001 Chad Walsh Poetry Prize, scholarships to the Breadloaf Writers Conference, as well as a residency at the Kimmel Harding Nelson Center for the Arts. Currently, she's a lecturer at the University of Pittsburgh, where she teaches writing. Hi, Jenny. How are you?
I'm good. Hi, Jan. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, I'm excited because you're going to read some new poems I think a lot of people have not heard. So let's get going.
Okay. This first poem I'm going to read is called In Full Velvet, and listeners should know that it begins in the voice of a taxidermist. It's in 7 sections, and the title makes a reference, In Full Velvet is a reference to a kind of white-tailed deer that's called a velvet horn, because they don't lose their velvet as many bucks do during the rutting season. There's a lot of animal imagery in this poem. So here we go. In Full Velvet. Before the horns fall away, here's what the taxidermist teaches. Because the velvet grows onto the hide, we have to skin it and cut it so nothing rips up and causes damage. Being cautious that we don't give it a big yank, use your knife and just kind of pull gently. Go on, tap the skin away from the burr. See? We boned it out. For hard-boned deer, we usually just kind of, but we can't do that when it's in full velvet, or it will, you know. Now we're going to put a puncture in the tip so we're not just hitting the one vein. That's what we want to see. When Aristotle dissected the embryos in bird eggs, he mistook the spinal cord for the heart. Anaximander of Miletus wrote that the first humans burst out of the mouths of fish and that we took form there and were held prisoners there until puberty. At its root, taxidermy means to arrange skin. Oh, love, how precise is any vision? It's also true that some whitetails never lose their velvet. Hunters raise their eyebrows, calling them atypical. Antlered does, cactus bucks, monsters, shirkers, ghosts, raggedy horned freaks, because they lead long, solitary lives, unweathered by the rutting season, because their antlers are covered permanently in a skin that most bucks shed in late summer, because their velvet horns spike and slope backwards, never hardening to pure bone, growing ever more askew. A recent one slayed at 30 points was described as having stickers, kickers, and a whole lot of extra junk full of blood, hot to the human touch. Gut a body and we're nothing left but pipes whistling in the breeze. That's all the cassowary is when you slit her open. She's lungs wrapped in dark fur. She's a full baritone with a soft waddle. There's nothing in her cask but soft tissue. Because it makes me want to turn away. I watch film footage of scientists poking through the pink tendons, the reptilian claw of the euthanized cassowarius. When they fondle the sweet spot, a talon shoots out and stabs a melon the same as it would the appendix of a lazy zookeeper. I had to cover my eyes when they severed the ancestral wing. Love, we are more than utility, I think. Love, I know my body's here when the turkey vulture comes out of the thicket, wings spread wide, smelling all of it. When talking about how the brain imagines the body, neurologists use the word schema to describe the little map that lies across the cortex, sensing all our visible and invisible parts. Some phantasms about our bodies in relationship to gender and sexuality are idealized, some degrading, some compulsory, some transgressive. I am using this embrace, love, to keep us here in this perceptual field. When I focus my binoculars, love, I am as careful as a raccoon working their way through trash. A soda can passes as the skull of a bird, an eye hole where somebody drank some sugar down. Love, come close. Love, lie back. Love, lie with me here beneath the bridge where the light falling on the water shimmers upward, casting shadows on the slats beneath. When you are here, love, I am beside myself. If secrets are prayers, then maybe bodies are worth revealing, worth repeating. How much plumage dare I show? How much down? Some days I am rich as the common garter snake, with more testosterone than you can handle. Oh, small pouch, oh, tiny nipple, oh, lactating man, or as the French say, cyprine, oh, Icelandic clam, and whales with lady hips, and dandelions in the thick grass, growing stamens, growing pistils, oh, lion's tooth, however the wind rips each part apart, however we clone and clone and clone.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Jenny Johnson. She's reading some new poems. I love that poem. I've heard it once before. You did a reading at the Warhol, which was really terrific. And there's so many lines that stand out in that poem for me. It's hard to know where to land, and I think that's that's maybe a part of the strategy of the poem, how it travels between voices and bodies,
mm-hmm.
And in the various sections. Would you say that's?
Yeah, I think that's an astute observation. I always love hearing how you read poems, Jan. I think that the poem is trying to work its way through a lot of different bodies of knowledge. If that makes sense, like it's trying to understand the body by thinking about everything from taxidermy to theory to neurology.
Yeah, I like how you put all this together in ways that hasn't been done. One place to land what might be in the poem where it says, because I don't think I have written this correctly, but something like, because I don't want to look, because I want to turn away, I watch. And that seemed really important in the poem. Willingness to acknowledge violence or darkness in the poem.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about the choice to let that into the poem?
Yeah. The line, because it makes me want to turn away, I watch film footage. I'm interested in taxidermy, or one of the reasons I let that kind of violence into the poem is because it seems like someone who's doing that kind of work is both doing something that in some ways disgusts me, but also, like, it's hard for me to look at animals that have been taxidermied, but also I know that there's a craft behind it, and so when I realized that taxidermy means to arrange skin, I started to think, well, what's the difference in terms of my work as a poet constructing different bodies on the page? And that kind of work is can be both beautiful, but there also can be something grotesque about it. And so I think the poem is kind of interested at looking at lots of different kind of bodies and not turning away from things that may be uncomfortable or hard to look at.
Mm-hmm. You know, when I listen to your poems or listen to you talk, I always feel a sense of balance and from you, and which is, you know, you're writing about very deep stuff and stuff with deep emotional material. And I'm always impressed that you can talk about it with such balance, because this is some heavy stuff you're talking about. So I guess what I'd like to ask is, the place, the place of reason in your work, and you know how important ideas are to you. I don't hear a voice in your poems going on a rant or saying, I can't take this anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, it might happen in a quiet way that mm-hmm. that is powerful.
Mm-hmm.
But can you
This poem in particular took me a really long time to write, and I think it was because even though now I can talk about it with some balance, as I was writing it, I wasn't sure if I was writing a poem at all when I was putting all these pieces together. I just felt like I was collecting stuff and throwing it all in one Word document. And then while I was at a residency where there was a nature center where there were a lot of taxidermied animals. But then one day I thought, oh my gosh, all that stuff I think is connected. And so then it was about trying to figure out, but maybe one of the ways I can talk about it with balance is because I've had a lot of distance from this poem.
Okay.
But I also think on the page that the part where I feel like it kind of shifts a little bit is when it turns to the lover.
Mm-hmm.
And though listeners can't see it, the section that turns to the lover, actually on the page, it spreads out more.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was thinking about how even as, you know, the speaker is trying to make sense of so many things through all these different kinds of knowledge, it's ultimately the turn to the lover where there's the most sort of sense of solace or mm-hmm. strength.
Yeah, yeah, and that's really clear in the poem.
Yeah.
Okay, could you read, you have a longer poem that you're going to read.
I'm going to read a sonnet crown. So that means that it's going to be 7 sonnets, and the last line of each becomes the first line of the next. And this is a meditation on sound in the body. So another poem that's inquiring about some similar subject matter, some different. And it's called Aria. Tonight at a party, we will say farewell to a close friend's breasts. Top surgery for months she saved for. Bundled close on a back step, we wave a Bic lighter and burn her bra. At first, struggling to catch nylon aflame, in awe we watch as all but the sheer black underwire melts before forming a deep, quiet hole in the snow. Sometimes the page too goes quiet, a body that we've stopped speaking with, a chest out of which music will come if she's a drum, flattened tight, if she's pulled like canvas across a field, a frame where curves don't show, exhalation without air. Then this off-pitch soprano steals through. Then this off-pitch soprano steals through a crack that's lit, a scarlet gap between loose teeth, interior trill, we're rustling open. Out of a prohibited body, why long for melody? Just a thrust of air, a little space with which to make this thistling sound. Little sister, the sky is falling, and I don't mind, I don't mind. A line, a girl, a prophet half my age told me to listen for one summer when I was gutless, a big mouth carp that drank down liters of algae, silt, fragile shale, while black-winged ospreys plummeted from above. While black-winged ospreys plummeted from above, we were born beneath. You know what I mean? I'll tell you what the girls who never love us back taught me. The strain within will tune the torqued pitch. In 1902, the last castrato sang Ave Maria, his voice a bifurcated swell, so pure a lady screams with ecstasy, voce bianco, breath control, hold each note, extend the timbre, pump the chest, that balloon room, and lift pink lips, chin so soft and beardless, a flutter, a flourish, a cry stretching beyond its range, cruising through 4 octaves, a warbler, a starling with supernatural restraint. A starling with supernatural restraint, a tender glissando on a scratched LP. His flute could speak catbird and hermit thrush. It was the year a war occurred or troops were sent while homicide statistics rose. I stopped teaching to walk out. my arms linked to my students to show a mayor who didn't show. 700 youth leaned on adults who leaned back. We had lost another smart kid to a bullet in the Fillmore, Sunnyside, the Tenderloin, to love without resource or peace. When words were noise, a jazz cut was steel. I listened for Dolphy's pipes in the pitch dark, a far cry, epistrophe, a refusal. A far cry, epistrophe, a refusal. A nightingale is recorded in a feel where finally we meet to touch and sleep. A nightingale attests as 197 bombers buzz and whir overhead en route to raid. We meet under cover of brush and dust. We meet to revise what we heard. The year, I can't tell you. The past restages the future. Palindrome we can't resolve. But the coded trill, a fever ascending, a Markov chain, discrete equation, generative pulse, sweet arrest, bronchial junction, harmonic jam. Bronchial junction, harmonic jam. Her disco dancing shatters laser light. Her rock rap screamed through a plastic bullhorn could save my life. Now trauma is a remix, a beat played back. Our circadian pulse you can't shake, inherent in the meter we might speak. So with accompaniment, I choose to heal at a show where every body that I press against lip syncs. I've got post-binary gender chores. I've got to move. Oh, got to move. This box is least insufferable when I can feel your anger crystallize a few inches away, see revolutions in your hips and fists. I need a crown to have this dance interlude. I need a crown to have this dance interlude, or more than one. Heating flapjacks, you reread Danse Russe, where a man alone and naked invents a ballet, swinging his shirt around his head. Today, you're a dandier nude in Argyle socks, and not lonely as you slide down the hall, echoing girly tunes through a mop handle. You make me feel like Shebop Doo-Wop, an original butch domestic. The landlord is looking through the mini blinds, perched on a sycamore. A yellow-throated warbler measures your schisms, fault lines, your taciturn vibrato. Tonight, as one crowd, we will bridge this choir.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Jenny Johnson. She's reading some new poems, and she just read A Crown of Sonnets to you. I think there's a lot of bridges and junctions in that poem in terms of content, but I'm wondering if you chose the Crown of Sonnets with the repeating lines to support that idea of bridge and junction in the poem.
I hadn't thought about that before. I definitely chose the crown because it did feel like a way that I could put some kind of mortar between a lot of loose bricks. So I guess, I hadn't thought about it, even though there's a bridge in the poem.
Yeah, there's a bridge. And there's junctions. I guess I was thinking, you always have a lot going on, but the idea of animal comes up a lot, human body as animal body, or the animal in the human, and the lines that in the second section, I was gutless, a big mouth carp that drank down liters of algae, silt, fragile shale, while black wing ospreys plummeted from above. I mean, it's beautiful, but every time we come, there's starlings in here, there's all kinds of animals, and every time I come to the animal, I'm a little stunned in a good way. And there's so much in this poem, you know, it's coming at you, and also in a good way. Can you talk about that move to the animal over and over?
In this poem, I was reading a lot about birds. I mean, I guess that's obvious. And I think I was interested in, I mentioned jazz musician Eric Dolphy, and I know that he used to play his flute to the birds.
Mm-hmm.
And he and then they would sometimes sing back. And he was interested in the fact that they could, when they sang, they could hit all these notes that, like, humans can't hear or know. And so something about, I think I'm interested sometimes in, like, the impossibility of the body, the limits of the body, and then the sometimes the animal world is a place where there are other bodies that have other potentials and, like, can push beyond limits that we can't even know or have the faculties to understand, and that's interesting to me.
Yeah, I mean, you also talk about in the poem revolutions in the body,
mm-hmm.
Which relates to what you were just saying, and in terms of, like, some animals in which the gender is not obvious or clear,
mm-hmm.
Does that idea have any bearing, do you think, on what you're working on?
Yeah. I mean, I hadn't started reading it when I was writing this poem, but in the poem I read before, the In Full Velvet poem, I have been reading a book called Biological Exuberance, Animal Homosexuality and Natural Diversity, and it's by Bruce Bagamil, and I recommend it. It's like...
what is it, animal exuberance?
It's biological. Exuberance.
Okay. Okay.
And it's a big book that just completely shifted my whole paradigm about how we think about what's natural.
Yeah.
And how much of, like, sort of heteronormative ideas and get just projected even onto the animal and insect world. And yeah. How much diversity and variance there is all around us every day.
Yeah. I mean, that takes me back to that beautiful line in the first poem you read, which is one of my favorite lines. Oh, love, how precise is any vision? Mm-hmm. I think it's so beautiful. And it's almost like a release, a relief. It's like, that is so right. I mean, nothing is precise. And in one sense, that's maddening. But in another sense, it's such... a sense of freedom.
Mm-hmm.
So we have time for a few more.
Okay. I'll read this karaoke poem.
Okay.
It's called Victory, and I guess all you need to know is that there's an image of a person singing karaoke about halfway through the poem. Victory. Think of a man who noodled a catfish with his bare hands. Gertrude Stein diagramming sentences, the one stealth leg of a stick bug shifting on a limb. Control, the second or fifth kiss, but never the first. Wild stallions on the walls in a Vietnamese restaurant. Your mother riding a horse through a hoop of fire. Regardless of how you feel inside, Diane Arbus said, always try to look like a winner. Think of the last good photo taken of you. You're on a stage in a bar singing a song you can't remember. Your mouth is stretched panther wide. The creases in your forehead are symptomatic of some form of inscrutable effort, and your insides are burning with inflammatory denial. You can't believe love left you. And yet, you do happy better than any drag you've seen in weeks. Gleaming like a gem on Liberace's finger, shameless in the wan karaoke light. Think of all the contests you'll never enter, the ones in which you were never a viable contestant, the ones in which you never cared to make the cut. For example, think of Mary Lou Retton, her arms flung back in her USA leotard, the squeak of chalked hands on the uneven bars, the perfect executions on the floor mat. Here, on a hollow stage, losing a private Olympics, your fingers skim the frets of an air guitar. Once, a friend warned, every relationship is a dress rehearsal for the next. What are you wearing? A dogged smile, a jersey at the end of a dirty match, too blinded by the strobes and the dive bar to register the blur of your teammates' faces. Are they fearful or joyous as you point and sing? Do you want to touch me? There? Where? There? Yeah. Think of a hunted head, the mounted antlers of a red stag, the first meaning of trophy, all the enemy's arms, a monument to parts, your figure as cold ornament embossed with leaves, chipped alloy inlaid with gold. Gonna read another poem called Little Apophat. Your child is a little lion cub ready to tear into a hunk of antelope, is a fuse bursting into electric sprays of light, is trouble, you say, like me, has your eyes, though, pale as the eggs of quail. Yes, and also shouting no as I reach for her bald fist, I wonder if she is our negative capability. Dare I say she's beautiful, or that seeing another photo, I feel inexplicably like a father, though I am nothing other than an ex-girlfriend falling in and out of touch. Dare I say I like to study not her features exactly, but all her small perfect shadows, her sleeves like swallow's wings, the oblong ring she casts moving down a slide, some latent echo inside you, now there of me, some remnant of the night we longed to against the drum of a water tower, but did it instead again and again on a bed too small for one. Would it stretch wonder if all our immaterial actions like wayfaring dreams could sire the ambition that ignites when we let a child sit too long with her own design, let her stack blocks one cube at a time, sturdy as a well-pointed chimney or a giraffe's dorsal spine or a tower of solid cheerleaders kneeling into sweaty backs and thighs until the pyramid's gotten too high and without warning all the bodies tumble down. Laughing. Look at how we make so much out of nothing. Little nothing, dare I tell you what your mother and I made. Firsts and fights that left the kitchen whitened by a fine silt of flour, and bras twisted into the untidy nests of lyrebirds, and closety love at the drunken end of straight parties, in cemeteries and in shower stalls, without sheet music, we were prodigious, learning by ear and mouth how to produce each vocal score. And when we were done and we felt like making more, we made it. And we made sweet, fast nothings with other people, too. Little Apophat, I could tell you stories of scientific miracles, late ovulation in garter snakes, the courting rituals of macaques playing hide and seek behind tree trunks, how when seals stay out to sea months after mating, biologists call all that waiting suspended animation. Which is to say that making you took time.
It's the poetry of Jenny Johnson. Thank you so much. That was great.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Prosody, a weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in Saturday mornings at 6:30 for Prosody 90.5 FM.